Welcome to Jackson Hole Economics. My name is Larry Hathaway, and I have the privilege of sitting down with Alex Friedman today to talk about the asset management industry. Alex is a respected leader in that space. For 5 years, he was the chief investment officer at one of the world's biggest wealth managers. Over the past 4 years, he was the chief executive officer of an asset manager with over $150 billion in assets. He was also the CFO at the Gates Foundation and spent time at Lazard. In short, he's seen a lot of the industry, has deep insights into its workings, and we're going to explore those insights here on today's podcast. So, Alex, it's a pleasure and a privilege to be able to hear your views today on these topics. So, let's start off with a fairly straightforward question. How do you characterize the current shape of the asset management industry?
It's pretty troubled, Larry. It's facing some real challenges that are almost existential. For a long time, really since the early 80s, asset management as an industry didn't need to innovate. People took their savings and they invested it. And largely, the economy did pretty well. And the assumption was that you needed professional investors, mutual funds, other kinds of funds like that to effectively manage your money. What's happened really since the financial crisis is that that basic proposition, the value proposition of the industry, has come into question. For the first time, regular investors are saying, we don't really think active managers add value, and many are turning away from that industry and choosing to put their money in passive products.
Right, so the move into passives has obviously caused problems for so-called active investors. Share with me for a moment your perspectives on active versus passive and what the value proposition of an active manager is supposed to be.
The value proposition of the active management industry is supposed to be the world is a really noisy place, and it takes someone who's got a lot of experience and skill to pick their way through the noise, find value, and allow individuals to participate in that value upside. What's happened really since the financial crisis is that because central banks lowered interest rates to effectively zero and bond yields fell to all-time lows, most investors said, we don't have an alternative but to put our savings into riskier assets like the stock market. And the supply-demand reality then is that the stock market went up and up and up because there was a lot of money that didn't have an alternative place. And it was like a rising tide. All you had to do was have your boat on that ocean, and the rising tide sent it in the right direction. If you were choosing to invest with an active manager, that active manager was trying to steer that boat left and right and left and right, and they had costs associated with doing so. And a lot of them didn't get to their destination as fast as the boat, which just followed the tide. And so after 10 years of that, a lot of investors said, you know what, I don't really need active management. I'll just choose to invest my money passively.
So is the secret to the success of the active management industry just choppier waters that the in the parlance that there needs to be more volatility, more challenging markets for them to prove their worth, or do they have other things they also need to accomplish in order to return to favor?
It's a great question. I think from my own experience, the answer is that they need to do a lot more than just hope for choppier water. If we were in the environment we might have been 20 years ago, choppier water would probably do it. But human psychology is such that once it starts to change, it tends to not really shift back easily. And the psychology of the investor has changed since the early part of this millennium to now as we go into the third decade. And the basic kind of view of the investor now seems to be, hey, if I'm going to be putting my money with an active manager, I want a lot lower fees because their performance just doesn't seem to justify those high fees from the past. And so the asset management industry has largely responded by lowering fees. But in order for the asset management industry to enjoy margins like it did before, as they lower fees, they're going to have to lower their expenses quite a bit. And it's not easy to lower those expenses because many of them have big calcified infrastructures, which haven't really innovated much over, say, the last 30 years, thousands of employees. And they have rising costs in a lot of ways. Data costs are going up, regulatory costs are going up, and it's more competitive to sell their products, so sales costs are going up. So it's not clear that they can lower costs to offset the pricing reductions that they're doing.
Right, so you've talked here about something interesting about the business model, namely that margins are under pressure from both sides. The price that asset managers can charge for their services is under pressure, primarily from passive investing instruments. And on the other side, a whole host of costs are rising, as you've just mentioned. Typically, in other industries, that leads to consolidation. Asset managers merge with one another or maybe with other financial institutions to achieve economies of scale. Is this going to be a pure scale business where the behemoths dominate, or is there still room there for new startups and nimble players to have a fair share of the business of this industry?
That's a question that a lot of asset management CEOs have been trying to answer. Some have chosen to merge and consolidate with the view that there are economies of scale and that will help them offset lower pricing power by kind of greater volume. I sometimes, though, ask myself, do I choose my doctor based on the doctor being at the biggest hospital? And the answer is usually no. I choose my doctor based on the specialty and whether they have a good reputation. I think there's an element of that in asset management, which would suggest that good investors in specialized small boutiques will probably have demand for their product and can see a business model that works. But it's gotten harder for them to start up. It's gotten harder for them to raise money, and their costs of doing so have certainly gotten more expensive. That does suggest that the large behemoths will probably be winners in the current trajectory of the industry. And I think we're seeing some of that. If you look at where most of the flows have gone, they've gone to the largest, say, 10 players. It's the groups in the middle that have really gotten squeezed because they've got rising costs, they don't perhaps have enough specialization, and they can't enjoy the economies of scale of the really big players.
So, pulling some of this together, if you were advising the senior management of an asset management firm, or maybe it would be the board of directors, about the three things they should get right and the three things that they at all costs should try to avoid, what would each of those sides of that equation look like?
Well, there are really only three levers you have running an investment firm. You've got what products do you offer? Second, do you have a sales force that can sell those products? And third, do you have an infrastructure that can handle the risk and compliance and data and reporting requirements of managing an asset management firm? You have to optimize all three. So first, you have to choose the right set of products to focus on. You can't boil the ocean and try to be everything to all players. Most demand trajectories today say passive products will take over the middle, what I would call kind of large cap equities in developed markets, where there just isn't enough information asymmetry to justify fees. And therefore, products that are more specialized and that can offer a better risk-adjusted return should see more demand. So being selective about products is key. Salesforce is essential. Unless you're one of the biggest players, it's going to be hard for you to succeed in all markets. It's just too expensive. So you probably need to pick a few markets where the products you have fit the buyer universe and make sure you've got an effective sales force that can sell it, or you partner with sales teams that can do so from other organizations and split fees. And third is it's getting very expensive on the infrastructure side to manage all the data and regulatory requirements that different regulators expect from asset managers. So we're seeing more and more outsourcing, and that's a trend that I'm sure will continue. There are risks in trying to do everything yourself, and there are also risks in outsourcing everything. We see this, by the way, not just in asset management, but obviously Amazon, AWS, Microsoft Cloud, companies more and more choosing to outsource what isn't their core business.
So there's a lot of talk these days also about things like robo-advising as a way of cutting costs for the asset manager, but also perhaps getting closer to what the client ultimately wants from the asset manager in terms of a portfolio that reflects their preferences as well as reflects their attitudes towards risk. Quite apart from just robo-advising, though, it feels as though asset managers are trying to discover the other value proposition that maybe for too long they neglected with their customers, which is tailoring a solution to their needs. They seem to sell performance before and seem to try to command a high fee from that. And as you've suggested, that might not work so well anymore. So, what's the future, both in technological terms, but maybe also in non-technological terms, of trying to tailor solutions more to individual client needs?
Yeah, I think you're right. In the past, the asset management industry would produce products and they'd say, look, it's a one size fit all, fits all. Here are the products, you can choose from them, and you can mix and match. Because buyers have gotten so much more sophisticated over the last 30 years, it's now really flipped, where what the asset managers are needing to do is, in a sense, disintermediate the I suppose you'd call them the wealth managers or the groups that are between the product and the end user, and to develop solutions directly that are relevant for the end user. And that's a little bit of a titanic struggle going on, maybe underneath the surface right now. So we're seeing wealth managers who say, maybe we really don't need asset managers. We'll just take passive products and build a portfolio that'll be a solution for our clients. And then you're seeing asset managers that say, huh, maybe we can go direct to the consumer. We don't need to go through the wealth manager, perhaps through technology. And that's a way for them to both protect their margins and also protect, perhaps more existentially, being disintermediated fully by the wealth manager. So I don't know the outcome is clear yet, and it's probably going to be a struggle back and forth for a while on that.
So, if we think about the trends in the management of money over, say, the last 50 years or so, it seems to me that it started with simply giving people access to the markets, the ability to buy and hold stocks, perhaps shortly thereafter to do the same thing with different types of bonds, including corporate bonds. One thinks of the sort of the Milken Revolution of the 1980s, which was then followed by the advent of hedge funds. More recently, a lot of the interest in managing money has turned to using quants, using mathematicians to discern patterns in capital markets and to try to exploit those patterns. Do you think that that is still the next wave in active management in the investment management industry, or what do you think is perhaps on the horizon?
It's a hard question to really answer with great conviction at this point in time because it's a big unknown. The quantitative investment industry seemed really attractive 15, 20 years ago because it was so new and there weren't too many players. It was a bit like hedge funds when they first began. As time has gone on, a few things have happened. First, computing power has basically become unlimited and available to everyone. So the advantage of being a quant manager who had the fastest computers has been effectively undermined. The second is that it used to be the really good quant managers, they had access to special signals that would tell them what they thought the markets might do. So for example, they might take satellite imagery of parking lots to develop hypothesis about retail sales. That was pretty slick 15 years ago. Everybody can do that today. They can pull it right off the web. So signals have degraded faster and faster. And third, there are just so many more players, entrants, that what's happened is any quick advantage that you might be able to get in the tech space or in the quant space in investing gets degraded away very quickly from competitors. There are a few exceptions to this, but largely what we're seeing is that returns tend to look more average across the overall quant industry than they might have a generation ago. So it's hard to say that that's, the answer to investing in the future. But what I do think is that there'll be a hybrid model that will become expected by everyone who puts their money with a professional money manager. And the hybrid is that you'll have people who invest the money and they've got a lot of experience and they do so with reasonable fees and good risk management. And they also employ quite sophisticated quantitative computer techniques, almost as guardrails for the human component. So think of it a little bit like a car. You're seeing the newest cars that have technology where if you take your eyes off the road, they kind of remind you you better look at the road, or if you start to drift across the center lane, they'll actually steer you back. That's the way I see, I guess, the future of quantitative investing interfacing with human investing. But it will probably be available to most sophisticated investors, which means the alpha or the value add may not be as big as one might hope.
So let's perhaps pulling some of these things together, and by way of a conclusion, we've talked about an industry that has fundamental pressure on its business model from both the revenue side and the cost side. an industry that has been challenged by technological development in many ways, an industry that's also struggling to find a differentiated performance model in order to justify the value that it brings to its clients. Taking those things together, and I know you've touched on this a little bit, but perhaps by way of summary, could you sort of present how you envision the industry advancing over the next 5 years, where the trends are likely to take us?
First, I think fees are going to come way down across the board, and that will be the case for just about all investment management firms. It's happened for mutual funds, it is happening for hedge funds, and eventually I expect it will happen for private equity funds too, which have been the outlier. Second, even as fees come way down, I think that there will be continuing struggle to gain more market share because there's so much psychological momentum for investors to turn to passive products, index funds, et cetera, that I don't think we've passed the peak of passive market share gains. Now, the one kind of caveat to that is if we do see a really choppy market, a lot of volatility, it's possible we'll start to see performance look a lot better on a relative basis amongst active managers. But I still think it will take years before the psychological effect of that is to make active management popular the way it once was relative to alternatives. A few other kind of big drivers, I guess, I think for the future are we'll see more and more specialization. It'll be very hard to be a generic me too player in asset management. We'll probably see a lot of firms go out of business. There are just a lot of asset management firms, and it's unclear that we need so many players. These are not trends that are unusual, by the way, just to this industry. If you look at the pressures on colleges today, there are almost as many colleges in the US, private colleges, as there are public companies, 4,000 plus or so. And we're seeing a huge amount of challenge to the basic business model of a college because of how technology has changed distance learning, for-profit models, and other kind of threats that didn't exist for the for the college model even a decade ago. So I see the asset management industry facing its own kind of existential evolution. The third, I think, is that we'll see regulators continue to crawl all over asset managers the way they did over banks, and that will change the cost structure of asset managers quite a bit. It already has. It's made it more expensive to operate. And it will be a bigger barrier to entry for smaller players, which should accrue to the benefit of the really large players. We're seeing the large players act a bit like pharmaceutical companies vis-a-vis the biotech industry. So when they see a small specialized player they think is interesting, they will often go buy a minority share and give that small player assets to manage. And it's a bit of a hedge for them against maybe the future lies in whatever that specialized player is doing. And we may not be able to recruit the talent because we're a big behemoth right now, but we've got the money. So we'll be able to protect against them becoming kind of the next hot thing.
So, Alex, I want to thank you very much for sharing your deep insights and your breadth of knowledge on the industry. I think two things stand out to me. First, this is an inherently complex and rapidly evolving industry, and we've really only been able to sort of touch on some of those issues. So, I hope that at some point in the future you'll rejoin us to talk about these issues. And second, and perhaps even more impressively, is the way in which you can take that complexity and explain it to us in very, very useful and very sort of clear terms. So thank you very much for your contribution today.
Well, you're too kind, and as you know, it's worth what you pay for, and that was free. So thank you very much, Larry.
All right.
See ya.